Welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland. I'm Marvin, and Tammy's doing the engineering again. I'll be here by myself in the studio because I left my computer at home, and so Aretha Franklin won't be in here with me. I have this great picture of Aretha on my computer that I can't remember how long I've had that picture of her. It was a picture of her standing on a balcony waving at the crowd below, and she's got a cigarette in one of her hands. You know, she's you know, Aretha Franklin, boy, Janis Joplin, Stevie Nicks of Fleetwood Mac, she's wonderful. And just, you know, they're just wonderful, wonderful singers. And I enjoy hearing them a lot. And I don't know much about the newer singers, but I know that those women are just amazing women. And I was thinking the other day, I was sitting around thinking about lead-ups to these wars that the United States does, you know. And it seems like there's a pattern to them that someone in the Pentagon, down in the bowels of the Pentagon, there's this big safe in there, and when they decide they want a war, they send somebody down there, and they open it up, and they get this big, thick book, and they put it out, and it, you know, it says, step one, do this, step two, do this, step three, do that, you know, and as they're walking, as the whoever's got that book and they're walking up through the Pentagon, I can imagine all these lifers, these career military people, you know, standing on the sides, watching them go by, clapping, you know, yay! Makes me mad. But I was thinking about that, you know, and this country really has a problem, you know, with war. And, you know, this freak in the White House now, you know, is trying to run the country like a business. And you can predict exactly what that guy's going to do, you know. You know, here's a guy that, just makes me so mad. But I was thinking, you know, one of the first things that the U.S. came out with on these wars, you know, was the Monroe Doctrine. And basically what the Monroe Doctrine said, that anything in this hemisphere is ours. And don't be coming in here, foreign countries coming in here trying to, you know, get a foothold in our country, because we're not going to let you do that. So, you know, if that's not pathetic, I don't know what is. And they meant it. You know, then you had people, I think it was Roosevelt, the first Roosevelt, came out with, said, speak softly but carry a big stick. You know, they had that one. Remember the Alamo was another one. And here's one that people, it's called Remember the Maine. And the USS Maine was in Havana Harbor. And the United States was really wanting to get the Spanish out of this part of the country, part of the world. And so the USS Maine blew up. And the first thing that they did was blame the Spanish for it, you know. But years later, I mean, probably 100 years later, they figured out that it was a explosion down in the belly of the ship that, you know, it wasn't the Spanish fault. It was an accident and blew it up. But what did we get out of that? We got basically Cuba, and then we got the Philippines from Spain. So that worked out pretty good for the, you know, for the wealthy class of America, you know. That worked out pretty good for them. And then there's this other one here. Man, I heard this one so many times. We have to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here. And that one, I heard that so many times. I'm sure you folks have too, you know. And I remember that here in the lifers, are people who stay in the military, you know, whole career. They call it a career, but they're lifers. And, you know, I heard him say so many times, now we got to fight those communist Vietnamese over here because we don't want them, you know, landing in San Francisco. And I always thought, man, they don't have a Navy big enough to bring them all that way. And their airplanes, I don't think, would make it. So you're full of it. And then I remember also there was during the U.S. invasion of the Central America, you know, they've done that forever, was the Sandinistas. I remember them saying, well, we got to fight the Sandinistas down there so they don't cross the Mexican border. You know, with America, you know, across the American-Mexican border. We got to fight them down there. And we know how that turned out and what's going on the border now. And another one of them that was a big one for them in the Vietnam era was the domino theory. And the domino theory was put out by Eisenhower, President Eisenhower. And the whole thing was that if Vietnam fell, then Laos would fall, then Cambodia would fall, then Thailand would fall, then they'd head for the Philippines, then they'd head for Australia. You know, none of that happened. The only thing that the Vietnamese, you know, they were having a civil war, and all they wanted was their country to be unified. And then after they did get their country unified, then the Chinese were supporting the Cambodians, the Khmer Rouge. They were supporting the Khmer Rouge. And the Khmer Rouge came into Vietnam and attacked some of the villages in Vietnam, southern part of Vietnam, saying, well, they're ours. You know, they're ours. We're going to take them. And then so Vietnam said, I don't think so. So they went into Cambodia and straighten that mess out. But the problem was because the Chinese were supporting the Khmer Rouge, that they were going to teach Vietnam a lesson. And so they attacked, I think it was 1979, they attacked in northern part of Vietnam and came over the border, and Vietnam fought them, you know, to got them to a standstill. And a friend of mine, he was a colonel at that time in the Vietnamese Army, and he told me that how, you know, that they didn't think they were going to be able to stop them, but they finally stopped them. And then the Chinese just pulled back, and Vietnam went ahead and started trying to get their country unified, get people out of poverty and things like that. But right now, the Chinese have started building up these sand islands in the South China Sea, and they've made some of them military bases, and they really protect those islands. And the U.S., along with Vietnam and the Philippines and a few other countries, I think, you know, are saying, you know, you can't do that. Some of those belong to us. There's a lot of oil on there, keyword oil on them. And so the U.S. is kind of hitting them in the nose with their fingers by sending ships through there. And Vietnam, I mean, China doesn't really care if they do the shipping routes. You know, if they stay over on the shipping routes, but when they try to get close to those islands, that's when the trouble's going to start. And if what the United States did, has done, you know, really not very long ago, was they sent these bombers over that area that are nuclear capable. And that scares me. You know, when the U.S. is sending ships over, I mean, airplanes over there that have the, you know, ability to drop nuclear bombs, that's a scary thing. But, you know, we just really got to have our eyes and ears open to what's going on there, because that would, ooh. the United States doesn't understand. Well, this guy, the guy in the office doesn't understand, you know. He's, like I said, he's trying to run his country like a government. I mean, this government like a business, and you can't do that. You can't run a government like a business. There's just no way around it. And he's so horrible. I just can't stand to even hear him talk. He's, you know, like when they were having the talks with North Korea, that when Trump didn't get his way, he just got up and walked away. You know, he wouldn't negotiate with them. And you can always tell if there's a picture of him and the heads of these other countries, if he doesn't get his way, you can look at him like he has a snarl on his face. He'll have his arms crossed, or he'll be sitting forward, you know. It's like, you have to do what I say, but they're not doing it. And another one of the things that I remember that this government has used a few times, how did our oil get under their land? You know, in Saudi Arabia, you know, that's our oil. Iraq, that's our oil. Iran, you know, that's our oil, you know. But the one that really has got me worried right now is Venezuela. You know, Dan Shea just went down to Venezuela, and he was down there for some meetings and everything. When he comes back, he's going to have a meeting put together for people to come and hear what was going on down in Venezuela. And boy, that's a really touchy spot. You know, the U.S. when they put Bolton in there, and then they put Abrams in there, you know, both of, I wonder if those guys have to every day get a new blood transfusion, because they got blood dripping from their hands, man. You know, Central America, boy, you know, Abrams really did a job on them. And when he was before the, I think it was the House, when Code Pink got up and started talking about the horrible things that he did, you know, you can just look on his face, you know. You know, I did it, but I'm not going to tell anybody I did it. And he definitely did it. And then the wonderful Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is that her last name, Tammy? Cortez, is that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, yeah. You know, she just flat out asked him, you know, why should we believe you? You know, you lied about Iran-Contra and all that stuff, you know. And then George H.W. Bush, when he was leaving office, he just pardoned all those murderers. You know, they all got away with it. You know, just so many people got killed in Central America because of these guys. You know, Ronald Reagan was just as guilty as the rest of them, you know, just as guilty. But these two guys, now they're in there with Venezuela, and I'm really worried about that. I have to take a drink here; my mouth's dry. And so they're in there with Venezuela, and then when the U.S. started bringing all the so-called humanitarian relief stuff down in, I think it's Colombia and Venezuelan border. And then all of a sudden, two of the trucks catch on fire, and they tried to blame that on Venezuela, but it was proven that they didn't do it; that it was just a setup. You know, they always try to get a spark, you know, that'll start it. You know, like the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam. When they lied about Vietnamese ships coming out and attacking American ships. You know, that was a big lie. And one of the things, when they attacked Afghanistan, I didn't like that at all. And then when George W. Bush attacked Iraq and pulled all the troops out of Afghanistan, and he attacked Iraq. And I don't know what one of these things that they use, you know, to get the American people to wrap that flag around themselves. You know, I'm pretty sure they didn't say, how'd our oil get underneath their land, you know, I'm sure. But that's what they wanted. They wanted all that oil. And that's what Bolton said about, if you listen to Bolton, what he said about Venezuela is that I'm sure the American business oil companies would, you know, like to go in there and, you know, do that work on those oil fields. So he said it right there, you know, what this is all about. And then the U.S. pulls their people out of the embassy. You know, what's that about? Why'd they do that? And that's just such a problem, so dangerous that they're doing that. You know, the United States has doing something. I talked about this before. What they're doing is the old siege program. You know, they're surrounding Venezuela with you know, blockade here, blockade there. You know, embargo on their oil. That's just the old siege, what the old siege that they used back in the Middle Ages was. And the U.S. is doing it now to the people of Venezuela. And when they put the embargo on the oil, that really put them in trouble, because that was how they were buying all their medicines and all their food products that they needed and all the parts for their machinery that they needed. But they put that embargo on them. That just, you know, really, really harmed them. And then when this big blackout came, you know, I thought that's kind of convenient that all of a sudden when all this trouble starts, then Venezuela has a power go out. That, you know, and then American people or people in the other parts of the country, oh, that's because they weren't taking care of all that. Well, it's because they have an embargo on them and they have trouble buying the parts. So don't tell me that it's Venezuela's problem. You know, they did, you know, this whole embargo thing. The United States put an embargo on Vietnam after the war in Vietnam. You know? So that's what they do. That's what they like to do. They put an embargo on them. We'll put an embargo on them, and we'll force them to do what we want to do. And one of the reasons that they do put embargoes on these people, on these countries, is to make it so hard on the average, everyday working person, is to get them mad and pick up arms and overthrow their government. That is what that's their big thing. That's what they want to happen. That's, you know, if they can get the people fighting the government, then they got it made. You know? Then we can put our person in there. This guy that says he's the president now, he was never elected. You know, he was never elected by the people of Venezuela. And the U.S. acts like he's the president. We're going to give him all this stuff, you know. We're going to give him all this money. If the United States worried about the people of Venezuela, why didn't they go through the U.N. and put all that, you know, that relief stuff through the U.N. and to get it into the people and help the people of Venezuela? I saw a picture that just... Oh, it was so sad and so horrible. It was a picture of a mother who was carrying her daughter who had died. And she was carrying her to the hospital, and the child had died. And it was such a sad picture. I mean, this embargo, when they put that embargo on that country, it just so horrible, so horrible. You know, and then it's like the propaganda that they used in Iraq, where they had this big thing where they brought these people over from Iraq and put them on television. And the girl, young woman, says that the Iraq, or maybe it was Kuwait, when they in Kuwait. I think it was when they went into Kuwait, Iraq, or Kuwait. And she said that they're taking babies out of incubators and throwing them on the ground and all this stuff. It turned out that she was the daughter of the ambassador, you know, and none of that stuff was happening. That she was just saying that, you know, and the Republicans were just eating it up. So, you know, that just, the American people, if I want to really know what's going on, I listen to other countries that do their news broadcasts in English. I do that a lot. You know, I go on the internet and I can do that, you know, Radio Havana and some of those countries, you know, and I listen to England, NPR, not NPR, but what is that over there? BBC. Yeah, and I listen to Al Jazeera, and I listen to other countries, you know, that have, Vietnam has a news hour in English that I listen to. So, you know, what we're getting here is this little bitty fraction about what they want American people to know. They don't want the American people to really know what's going on. And what Trump does is he'll have this crazy stuff, you know, now the wall and all this, and get people looking at that while he's doing other horrible things. You know, if they can get the American people to look at something that really doesn't matter to him, but he can, that way he can do all this nasty stuff he wants to do while they're not watching, you know, what's going on. And that happens a lot. That happens a lot. You know, it's a horrible thing. And then I was this morning. I listened to the radio in the mornings, and when I heard that this fascist, white wing fascist, went into a synagogue in New Zealand and killed 49 people with an automatic rifle. It was a mosque. He went into a mosque, didn't he? He went into a mosque and killed so far 49 people. And he wrote this manifesto saying, you know, about the people of non-white people taking over. You know, he said that Trump was one of his heroes. And he had the names of all these people here in the States who had gone and killed people in the black churches or in mosques, you know, these fascist right-wing people who have gone in to do that. And I thought, you know, Oregon, we have got to stick together against these fascists. People who come into our state and try to talk about their, you know, their misogynistic, fascist, racist ideology hiding behind prayer. But when these patriot prayer people come into town, they have the Proud Boys with them, the 3%ers, you know, all those people. And Portland stands up. Portland stands up to him. Won't let him get away with it. You know, the Black Bloc, Antifa, is still our front line against these people. And that's good. And finally, they arrested two of these so-called patriot pair people for assault. And one of them they got here, and the other big guy, this big Samoan guy, he's in Samoa right now, but he says, oh, I'll come back, and I doubt if he'll come back because he's going to jail. But, you know, if I can't imagine what would happen if something like that happened in Portland, if something like New Zealand or another part of the country happened in Oregon. Oregonians will not put up with that. The people of Portland will not put up with that. When I go to these rallies and I see all these people out there, you know, all these people out there, I say, maybe I think we got a chance, you know, to make our state a great, wonderful state. And it's men and women. It's young kids. You know, it's just people of different races that are out there. I remember when Trump got his regime, the Trump regime, was put into the White House, even though he lost the popular vote, how many people in Portland came out into the streets? It was amazing. Amazing. Tammy, you want to go ahead and play that number two song for me? Military madness is exactly what's going on in this country right now. Not only this country, but a lot of other countries too. And I just thought I'd play that. And that first tune, Combat Nurse, that's by Country Joe McDonald. And, you know, I played that for Eileen and for all the other nurses out, combat nurses out there, you know. I have a book at home I just bought, and it talks to a lot of these nurses that went to Vietnam to serve. And boy, a lot of them changed their minds once they got back about war because they thought, you know, 12, 13, 14 hours a day over there, you know, constantly working on guys trying to keep them alive. And Arlene told me one time, or maybe it was Colleen, one of them told me that the hardest part was when they had to be on triage. And triage is when they decide who's going to get worked on and who wasn't, you know. And that all of the nurses I've ever talked to in Vietnam were always, that was the hardest thing for them, was that triage. And boy, talk about survivor's guilt. That these nurses, you know, they have it. So do combat medics. You know, they have that too. My cousin was a combat medic for the AmeriCal in Vietnam, and he has a lot of survivor's guilt. And, man, I'm just sure that not only, you know, having to make those decisions on life and death is pretty hard, but I love them to death. I love the medics, and I love the nurses, because they were so wonderful. Today, Tim, isn't today when the students walk out? Yeah, students are going to walk out about the environment, you know, and they're serious. Anyone I saw, Dianne Feinstein, a senator from California, being confronted by these students, that was just amazing. And she's trying to, you know, it was just, you got to go on YouTube and look at that. These kids are wonderful, man. They're not going to give up. They're going to go after, because this is going to happen to them if they don't get this thing straightened out. So if you're out there and you're a student, do the walkout. I'm supporting you 1,000%. Do that walkout. And I just support you a lot. And something, I'm going to ramble here just for a little bit till I get serious again. I was driving in this morning, and every time I drive into Portland, I see Mount Hood. And it's such a beautiful mountain. So beautiful. You know, when the sun shines on it and it's just shiny, and sometimes it looks pinkish when the sun, you know, in the clouds, and it's just a beautiful mountain, just a beautiful mountain. And then I thought, who's that named after? And so I thought, I'm going to look that up. And it's named after a British admiral, Admiral Hood. That's who it's named after. You know, I was thinking maybe it was from General Hood, you know, the Confederate general during the Civil War, but it wasn't. It was named after this general. And there's been times when people have tried to change the name to something, you know, more fitting, I'd say. And the native population, tribes in the area used to call it Y East. Y East. So why don't we just call it Y East, you know? Why are we having some British admiral, you know, named our mountain after some British admiral? I think go back to Y East. I like that a lot. So let's do that. Let's do that. And what else do I got here? I'm going to my next page here, since I don't have my computer. Oh, yeah. I talked to these guys the other day on the phone. I was going to have them on this show, but I decided to wait on it. They're a group that deals with veteran suicides, and they also other things, but veteran suicide. And so they were going to be coming down to Concordia College, I believe. If not that, they were going to come down to College Grove. And so I going to wait until they come here in Oregon and then have them come on and talk about veteran suicides. And, you know, 22 veterans a day commit suicide, you know. And that might not sound like a lot, but in comparison to the you know, people of the same age and everything, it's pretty high. And my friend Christy works up at the VA, and I talked to her about it, and she says, yeah, you know, it happens a lot up there, a lot, but, you know, and with guys now, it's not just the younger troops that are killing themselves, it's older people too. And my brother-in-law, Jeff, sent me this article on it, and it's on my computer at home. But it's really, really interesting about it that, you know, that, and it's not just enlisted people, it's officers too that are taking their lives. And I was talking to Christy, and I says, you notice, you know, Christy, in the last 15 years that I'm finally, you know, we're starting to have a lot more African-Americans, veterans come up to get health care, a lot more women coming up to get health care, you know, veterans that are coming up to get health care. You know, it says two things. One, that civilian health care doesn't work, and that these people coming up to get health care now through the VA, they deserve it. They deserve to get health care up there. And now that the VA is trying to privatize everything, you know, they're saying that they're trying to make it better, but underneath there, you know, they're trying to privatize it. And I don't think that's a good idea to privatize it, because I had to go have something done, and I talked to my primary caregiver, and in fact my primary caregiver is a woman doctor, and she's great. And I think once a week she goes up on the hill and works at the women's clinic up on the hill. And I think that the women ought to have their own clinic. And for one thing, because all the things they had to put up with in the military, which we've talked about before, you know. And my doctor wanted me to have, I can't remember what test it was, but I couldn't get in real soon, so the people called me and says, why don't you go, here, you're authorized because you live so far away. You could go to a civilian and get it done. I could not find a civilian doctor to do it, because they say, well, it takes so long for us to get paid, and we have to do all this paperwork and everything. It's just not worth it. So, and then I had to have a tooth fixed, and I couldn't get in real soon. So they said, go ahead and find a dentist. Same thing, couldn't find a dentist, because it takes too long for them to get paid, and there's too much paperwork. So, but, and then they're trying to privatize it. I don't think that's going to work. Not going to work. I would also talk with these guys that I'm going to have a show with, and they're talk about the homelessness too, about the veterans' homelessness. And here in Oregon, at any one time, there'll be 1,300 homeless veterans on the streets. And I got that off of a report. And Oregon has a homeless rate of about 10% of the population, and that's pretty high for homelessness for people. And so, I've known a lot of guys and women have veterans that have been homeless, and mostly because they can't find a job, and a lot of them are alienated from their families, you know, and a lot of the homeless veterans are women. And a lot of those women are women of color, you know. African-American women have a hard time, you know. There should be just a special thing for those women, for African-American women to get, you know, off the streets, not just veteran women, but all women off the streets. It's got to be a horrible life, you know, living on the streets as a woman. You know, especially if they have a child. That's just, you know, Ani did that great show about women this morning. And while she was talking about that, talking to people, you know, I thought, boy, what percentage of those women, you know, are women of color, and how horrible it is, and how the violence in the homes and is against these women. You know, my friend, she was in the Navy, and she was telling me that she was in the Navy before the Gulf Wars, and she was saying that it was horrible then that they that these women had to protect themselves, you know, by sticking together. And if and she said she got, you know, a lot of harassment when she was in the Navy. And oh, she said it was just horrible. And you know, I did not talk about this stuff a lot, but the homeless rate in this country on everybody is really high. You know, I look as I drive through Portland sometimes and see all the homeless people on the streets of Portland, and I think here this country is so rich, and we can't even help our own people. And I think that's, you know, just a horrible, horrible thing. And I'm going to get right back to, I don't know why my mouth's so dry this morning. You know, I'm going to get back to these shootings. And the courts just said that the families from Sandy Hook could sue the arms companies. And I thought that's great. I'm glad they can do that. And then I thought, you know, all those children, what was it, 20 or 21 children were killed, and plus five or six teachers, and nothing happened after that? You know, that the Senate didn't try to step in and do something? You know, that the Congress didn't do anything? You know, I just, if it's okay to shoot kids dead, you know, what chance do we have to get these, you know, these rifles, these automatic, semi-automatic rifles under control? When children can be slaughtered and nothing happens, no uproar over it, you know, what chance do we have? You know, what chance do we have? And then I just went right back thinking about those poor African Americans that were slaughtered in their church. The people up in Chicago, wasn't it, Tammy, that were killed in their church? Yeah, Philadelphia, Tammy says. That was a mosque too, wasn't it? Oh, it was. And they slaughtered all those people. And then today, so 47 people that were murdered, and it'll probably go up. But they said that two synagogues were attacked. And how did that guy get from one mosque to the other mosque without being caught, you know? How did that happen? You know, how could he go from one to the other without being caught? I've never heard him say anything about that. And he had an semi-automatic rifle. And he was a fascist right-wing supremacist, you know? And then what is the Trump come up with? You know, our loves and prayers are with you. You know what he can do with his loves and prayer? You know, it's just, he's so horrible. He's horrible. What good is that going to be? After all of these shootings, after all of them, they get, our prayers and hopes go out to the family. You know, I've heard kids say, we don't want your hope and your prayers. We want you to do something about it. Because it's usually children getting slaughtered. And now people in churches and synagogues and mosques and just, you know, getting slaughtered. And we're still not doing anything about it. At least they stopped the sale of bump stocks that made a semi-automatic rifle into an automatic rifle. And there was a big fight over that. A big fight over that. Bump stocks that made a semi-automatic into an automatic rifle. And they... It was such a fight to get that done. And this guy had a semi-automatic rifle, and as fast as you can pull that trigger, it'll put a bullet out. That's what that does. You know, then put that bump stock on there, and it's fully automatic. It can really put out some rounds and kill a lot of innocent people. A lot. I was thinking the other day how many mass shootings this country has had, and there were so many, you know, I just you know, thought this is the war zone, that they're going into these places and killing all these people for ideology, you know. You know, and then this guy here that did the one in New Zealand was filming it as he went. He had it filming. He was filming it, and they uploaded it to YouTube, but YouTube took it off real fast. Took it off, and you know, it's a war out there. It's a war, and that's what these guys say. All of these people who do these mass shootings want to start a race war. That's what they said in this manifesto. This guy wanted to start a race war. Philadelphia, the guy wanted to start a race war. Then the black church, he wanted to start a race war. And then all these right-wing fascist groups, you know, these are heroes to them. These are heroes to them. And I keep going back to here in Portland. Forbid that happens here. You know? And the other day, I was watching, I don't know, maybe YouTube, when this punk guy from Patriot Prayer is threatening, Mayor Wheeler, called him Antifa Wheeler, you know, and he's just going on and on and on and on. I stood about 2 minutes of him, you know, and then I got off because I just can't see. He's just a liar. He's just a liar about it. So we have to really keep our eyes and our ears open about what's going on out there with these right-wing fascist groups. We just, you know, we have to keep our eyes open and our ears open, and we got to support all these groups that are fighting those groups. You know, the other day I heard that some of our trans sisters are getting beat up here in Portland. We can't let that happen at all, you know. We just can't let that happen. It's just, you know, just a horrible thing to happen. And I'd seen this, a little bit of this film. We got a phone call by a guy, Mike, and he says Combat Obscura is a video about Afghanistan, what the troops are doing in Afghanistan. And it's definitely an unauthorized film. And he says you can get it on iTunes. It's called Combat Obscura. And the one I saw that the Marines are really, really don't want people to see is, I think it's this film. And it shows these soldiers, you know, that are bleeding, and they talk about what's going on. And it's something to really look at, you know. If you look at that, then you can talk to your friends and family that support it and say, look what these are the guys that fought the war, what they think about it, you know. So I really want to thank Mike for calling in, and so we can put this out. It's called Combat Obscura. And if it's the same one that I saw, it's really, really worth seeing. So, yeah, it's on iTunes, Tammy said. So, you know, if you want to do that, you know, look that up, that would be really, really good. And I think when I looked up how many mass shootings since Trump took office, I think it's 360. It's what I think, but I don't, that's kind of high. So I'm not going to say that's true. But that's pretty high. And if that is true, that's a problem. Because here's this guy, Trump. He will not say anything bad about these right-wing groups. He won't do it. You know, he just won't do it. And today, did you see what he did today, Tammy? He said the military's on his side. The police force is on his side. The motorcycle guys are on our side, you know, and he's saying, you know, it's just like him saying, you know, if you don't do what I say, these guys are going to turn on, we're going to take over. Did that what you thought he said, Tammy? Yeah, So he's saying, you know, you better fall in line or I'm going to turn the goons loose on you. And I don't really think that the military is so much on his side from what I've heard. And the police forces, I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of really good people. Well, that's what he said about a lot of good people. But, you know, we outnumber those folks by so many people. You know, if he starts something, there's going to be more people against him than there are for him. And I can't imagine that the military would do that, you know. But then I think back on my buddies at Kent State in 1970, where the National Guard shot them, killed four of them, and wounded about 12 of them. And my friend Joe Lewis, who lives out in Scappoose, was one of them. He got shot. And to this day, he has hip problems, you know. And the first thing they did is blame the students, not the soldiers that shot them. So maybe they would turn on us, but I, you know, we have to really work hard to talk them out, you know, tell, give them what's really going on. And Portland is such a liberal, great city that we can do it. I mean, the people of Portland have stood up. You know, they stood up, and they're going to continue to stand up. When I see all these people I've never seen in my life out there on the streets, you know, I have a lot of hope. I really do. I have a lot of hope for Oregon. And look who we have on the city council. You know, Joanne. Joanne's on the city council, and she's doing great. Joanne's also a Navy veteran. I think it's the Navy. Might be the Air Force. I know she's a veteran. So, you know, she has that outlook her whole life. You know, Joanne Hardesty, you know, when she's had that her whole life. So not only does she have it, the work she's done, she also has that military experience that she knows what, you know. So Joanne's a great, great one to have. We need more like her. I wish she was in charge of the police department here in Portland. I really do. I hope she runs for mayor someday. I hope she runs for the Senate someday or the House, you know, because she would be wonderful. She'd be wonderful. She's one of us. You know, and so, Tammy, we're just about out of time here, and I will be back on April 19th at 9 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM radio, Portland, Oregon, and there it is.
It ain't nothing but a heartbreaker. I got one friend that's the Undertaker. Oh, Lord, has shattered many a young man's dreams. Made him disabled, bitter and mean. Life is much too short and precious to spend fighting wars each day. War can't.